Greetings. My name is Eddie Howells. I'm a university lecturer in Christian spirituality. I live in Buckinghamshire with my family. We're five of us at home during the lockdown, my wife and three boys. In lockdown, the rhythm of life has changed. For most of us, there are very few trips outside the house. The people you live with and the place you live in are the same, but the wider circumstances have changed dramatically. People have different experiences of lockdown. For some, it brings a welcome break from their busy lives, providing more time for their own projects. For others, it's a more busy time than usual, juggling family and work commitments, and with added responsibilities, such as managing homeschooling for children or dealing with new situations at work. For everyone, though, there's a fear generated by the virus and an anxiety about the future. There's an immediate worry about getting the virus, and a more general uncertainty about when things will get back to normal, and how they'll get back to normal. People respond in different ways. One person said to me that though he expected to have lots of time to get on with various projects, he was finding that his time and attention felt quite fractured, and it was hard to focus on anything. Another said that he felt frustrated that he could not be of more use to others. He felt that he was neither doing the fishing nor mending the nets, which was what his dad used to say to him when he was messing around at home with nothing to do. For a long time, I have admired the work of John of the Cross. I think that John of the Cross would have understood this situation well and has some useful things to say about it, especially about its spiritual effects and how best to respond. John spent the best part of a year in prison. He was put in solitary confinement by hostile religious brothers for his part in the reform of the Carmelite order in the Carmelite monastery of Toledo in Spain. After a remarkable escape, he produced poems and writings on what he called the dark night of the soul, a phrase that has become common parlance. Being in prison in 16th century Spain was a far cry from being in lockdown in your home today. Of course, it was a lot worse. But John applied the experience to a wider and more common set of experiences associated with the spiritual life. People tend to think of the dark night of the soul as an exceptionally severe experience that happens only to a few unfortunate individuals. But John defines it as any experience that is both outside your control and significantly affects your spiritual life. It occurs whenever circumstances disrupt your usual way of experiencing the presence of God. Rowan Williams puts it like this: "The suffering involved is the pain of not being able to evade the constraints of reality, the givenness of events." It may not be a deep suffering, but the usual way of proceeding has been obstructed. You have not been in this situation before, and you don't know how best to respond. The circumstances are unfamiliar. John focuses on the fact that this change is felt as outside your power to control or influence it. You cannot change it or make it go away. The darkness is a kind of fog in the mind, generated by the stress of not being able to control and not know what happens next. The lack of coordinates in this new landscape instills a sense of disorientation. Feeling that there is nothing certain to grab hold of, it can even produce a kind of vertigo, as if looking into a frightening abyss. Levels of anxiety can rise unchecked. At the risk of oversimplifying John, I'd like to present three ways in which he seeks to bring understanding to this experience, and then three ways that he suggests we respond. First, John regards faith, hope, and love as at home in this situation and ready to grow. A lack of certainty about what comes next is fertile soil for faith, hope, and love. In John's spiritual canticle, he begins with the lines, "Where have you hidden, beloved, and left me moaning?" Out of faith, hope, and love, the soul cries out to God, asking for God's presence. John comments on these lines. Moaning is connected with hope, and the Apostle Paul affirmed that he and others moaned even though they were perfect. Then John quotes Romans 8:23. We ourselves who have the first fruits of the Spirit moan within ourselves, hoping for the adoption of the sons of God. John regards the kind of yearning that arises from wanting circumstances to change as the stuff of hope. From the perspective of hope, faith and love, this yearning is a sure connection with God, as the Spirit intercedes within us. God is present in this yearning, not absent. Second, John looks to the example of Christ as one who experienced the most extreme abandonment, as he puts it, on the cross. He says, Christ was compelled to cry out, my God, why have you forsaken me? Yet, John goes on, by this he brought about the reconciliation and union of the human race with God through grace, at the very moment in which he was most annihilated in all things. For God, the deepest darkness of the abandonment of the cross is no barrier to grace. Into this place, Christ brings, as John says, the reconciliation and union of the human race with God. Our own darkness, therefore, is no barrier to God, and however trivial by comparison, God goes before us into it to redeem it. Third, according to this logic, in which God is present in the darkness, we can gain a new understanding of our experience. Our experience of darkness can become what John calls a ray of darkness, a darkness shot through with God's light. He emphasizes that this takes time. It is a contemplative awareness, learned through long experience. But we can have intimations and brief experiences of it now, and at any time. Now let's turn to the implications of these points, to see how John draws them out. In the first place, he says, recognize that there is no sense in which these changed circumstances and the fears and anxieties that follow from them are your own fault. There's a tendency to think that what faith asks of us is to try a bit harder and put a brave face on it. That might be the case if we could do anything about it, but in this case, the circumstances are far beyond our control. Though we can make efforts to be positive, we're bound to pick up a good deal of the anxiety and fear that is around us. There's a place, of course, for telling yourself and others to cheer up and look on the bright side. I have one teenager who says once a day or so, this is never going to end. I'm never going to get to university. In response, my wife and I try to say positive things. But with God, John says, you don't have to do that. God has far more to give you than a stiff upper lip. God wants to be with you. So name your fears and anxieties and yearn for God's presence with you in them. Second, recognize that the divine logic is different from your natural logic. For us, darkness and light are incompatible. We naturally think that the light of God's presence can have nothing to do with the darkness of our fears and anxieties. But Jesus went into the darkness to experience the fear and anxiety of extreme abandonment. At this moment, our darkness was penetrated and transformed by the divine light. God's light entered into the territory of the deepest human darkness. The experience of darkness was opened to God's light. Third, then, ask for the faith, hope, and love to see God in the darkness. Go with Jesus into the darkness to find and experience God there. See God as the ray of darkness, where darkness is illuminated from a deeper source, and from further within, and by a greater light. as the words of Psalm 139 so beautifully put it, especially in the Old Coverdale translation. Peradventure the darkness shall cover me, then shall my night be turned to day. Yea, the darkness is no darkness with thee, but the night is as clear as the day. The darkness and light to thee are both alike. The lockdown may not seem much beside John's experience of solitary confinement at the hands of his religious brothers, and still less beside Jesus' experience on the cross. But by recalling Jesus' example, John takes us to a place of self-acceptance, where we can own our fears and anxieties, however trivial they seem, acknowledging them as places in which God is interested and where God is present. They are a worthy offering, loved by God. The feeling of time and attention being fractured, or of the frustration of neither doing the fishing nor mending the nets, or much worse fears and sufferings, all these are stilled when we see God's presence entering into them. We can dwell in them with the Lord, even while hoping and trusting that circumstances will improve.